Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Gioiella. What exactly is life list coaching? Well, my guest today can tell you all about it. Caroline Adams Miller is a coach and an author. She's a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania's master's program in applied positive psychology, and she believes that writing lists and setting goals is critical to achieving happiness. In fact, she's written about it in her new book, Creating Your Best Life, The Ultimate Life List Guide. Caroline Adams Miller joined me from Washington. Caroline Adams Miller, welcome to the Coaching Commons.
Hi, thank you.
Well, this book, Creating Your Best Life, I've only just started reading it, but I must put impartiality of the journalist aside and say I really, really am enjoying reading this book. It is filled with a sense of optimism, and there's an energy about it from the quotes that you start off with to the kind of the mission that you set out, which is essentially, you know, do it. You can do it. Did you set out to be as positive as you set out in the book?
Well, you know, the genesis of the book was my capstone project at the University of Pennsylvania in their master's in applied positive psychology program. So it was really birthed from a positive psychology petri dish. So it probably was going to turn out positive one way or another, but this has been my niche as a full-time coach, just even more so, though, since I really studied and kind of mastered and continue to learn more about the field of, you know, human excellence, human motivation, and how do you get things done? And how do you help people turn the key in the lock in their brains to not only help them think outside the box and sometimes play a little bit bigger, but how do you help them build those feelings of self-efficacy so that they, too, believe that they can go out and have these mastery experiences that lead to the accomplishment of the goals that matter to them? So the book was really constructed very thoughtfully with you know, what is the study of happiness? How does it relate to the field of the science of goal accomplishment? And then how do you go about, you know, setting and accomplishing these goals? And what factors contribute, you know, help and hinder the accomplishment of goals? So it's a very unique book. Nothing like it has ever been put out on the market. It's the first research-based mass market self-help book on goal accomplishment ever published, which continues to stun me. When I go in any bookstore, really, the bestseller was The Secret, or something like Getting Things Done, which is a really fine book. But again, there's no research. There's no footnotes. There's no, you know, quotes from people like, you know, Locke and Latham, the goal-setting theorists. And I really, really wanted to bring to the coaching world an empirically-based piece of work that would help people become better coaches. But I also wanted laymen to pick up the book and know exactly, as they went through the book, what they needed to work on, what they needed to address, if they wanted to set and achieve the goals that matter to them too.
Right, because there is that gap between creating a vision board, writing down what you want to do, and then actually taking those steps to get there. That's the,
sure,
the thing.
Sure, and that's why I drew in things that I don't think I've ever seen in any kind of goal accomplishment book, like social contagion theory. I think one of the biggest reasons why people don't accomplish the goals that they want to accomplish is because of the people around them.
Yeah.
You know, social contagion, you know, who is in that inner circle? Because I'm always saying to people, there ought to be a barrier to entry to be on your A team. Not everyone should make the cut, because who you spend time with and who you value is a predictor of who you're going to be. And who you're going to be kind of, you know, sets the tone for what are you going to do with your life? Who are you going to become? Are you going to be mediocre? Are you going to be great? Are you going to have challenging and specific goals? Are you going to have easy, low goals? I mean, who do you want to be? And so by definition, if you just think about it, high achievers don't hang out with low achievers. They don't really have time for them. They don't really learn from them. So I talk about social contagion. I talk about priming. I talk about grit. I talk about savoring. I talk about the risk-regret tipping point. I mean, there's so many new things in this book that no one's ever written about. I'm really proud of it. It's like I gave birth to another child or something this year. So it's just a remarkable book from so many standpoints. And it is, you know, it's getting a lot of attention from all the right places, and that makes me feel really, really gratified.
Yeah, I was really struck also by your how much importance you put on who you surround yourself with. And I feel that, you know, personally, I've experienced that in the past
6 months or so in my life. You know, I come from a background working in television news, and when I left that world and entered the world I'm in now, I noticed in looking back that, you know, that is a world just filled with cynicism and edgy humor and not a lot of happy people, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that really has an impact on, you know, if you set a goal, if you speak that to the people around you and they give you that kind of, right, well, that just, that's a killer right there.
Well, there's research on that. I actually got to hear Shelley Gable from UCLA talk about what's called active constructive responding earlier this year at the International Positive Psychology Conference. And one of the really interesting things about having a dream and stating it to other people, or even having good news about something that happened to you, is the first person you say it to, their response ends up dictating whether or not you continue to share it with other people.
Uh-huh.
So if you share it with the wrong person, there's only one good type of person, and that's an active constructive responder. And that's somebody who's really interested, asks questions, wants to know more, is excited for you, smiles, just, you know, wants to give you time and energy so that you have, you know, you can articulate your good news or your dream or whatever. The other three kinds, which are, you know, passive constructive, active destructive, and passive destructive, you can kind of figure out what they are, and I go into it in the book. Those are the three wrong kinds of groups to share your dreams or good news with. So that first person is critical, and we all need to be really careful. So let's say you live and work in a bad environment, like, I don't know, television news, and that's the only feedback you get. There's a high probability, at least in my book, that you simply aren't going to go after and achieve the things that matter to you because you don't have people who believe in you surrounding you.
And it can just be infectious when you encounter or find yourself spending time around people who see the world as limitless, who see the world as a place where if you have an idea, why can't it happen? Why can't you own your own business? Why can't you do this? And it's sort of, I've found myself when spending more time with that type of person, I find it's infectious. I feel the same way. I look at my own goals, and they don't sound as crazy when
right.
I'm around those people.
Right.
And in fact, I start thinking, well, geez, what could I do right now that would get me one step closer to that? You know?
Right, and I think that I talk about the positivity ratio in the book, and that's Barbara Fredrickson's work with Marcel Losada, a mathematician, and they really came up with this thing called the positivity ratio, where if you're over a 3-to-1 ratio of 3 positive comments to 1 negative, you begin to see what's called an upward spiral of well-being. People, you know, think more creatively, more broadly, they're more hopeful, they're more optimistic, they think more in joining ways, they're more curious about the environment. So what you're describing about feeling contagiously optimistic, that's what happens when you're over this 3-to-1 ratio. And we can all construct environments that are like that. Now, 5, 6-to-1, that's optimal. But, you know, some of the very practical homework you can, you know, use in your own life is, what is the ratio that I live and work in? What kinds of responses and positive comments do I have around me or not? And what am I going to do about it? So it is contagious. You have this upward spiral of well-being. If you flip it upside down, there's a downward spiral of well-being too. If you're
right.
under 3-to-1, you just start to get flushed down the toilet. Everything good just leaves.
Right. I mean, I think everybody can identify with being around somebody who makes this phone call when they have the good news, and they call the usual suspect who, you know, rains on it. And then suddenly
right.
that person is no longer as happy as they were a few seconds ago. It's just as if you and it's a reliable structure, you know. I'm going to pick up the phone, I'm going to share my good news, and I'm going to feel worse.
Right, and you know what makes it so subtle and so destructive is it's often family members. So you will call them out of obligation or duty or just thinking, well, they ought to be happy for me. After all, it's
right.
my mother, or it's my father, it's my sister. And I wish I had a dollar for every single person who said to me over the last 25 years, you know, how can I screen out my mom?
Right.
You know, my mom, she loves me, but she's just never happy for me because it reminds her of, you know, the dreams she never got to pursue or whatever it is. But I think that piece where you go out of obligation, you may recognize you feel worse after you talk to them. And after all, you can catch somebody's mood over the phone. There's a study in the book I talk about that. So it only takes like 20 minutes to get depressed. if you talk to a depressed person on the phone.
Right.
And so you have to wake people up in their own lives. And you have to point to the factors, which I do in the book. I point to the factors that you may not be thinking about, like who do you call? Do you just call your parents out of obligation? And by the way, you know, do you have pictures of people out of obligation around your house, people you don't like? Because there's studies showing if you look at pictures of people, even fleetingly, who don't support you in your goal pursuit, it actually impacts your behavior in the following week.
Right. That's, I mean, it is very subtle the ways you can just trigger that sort of mindset.
Absolutely.
You don't even have to talk to them. Just look at them.
Right. So, I mean, I'm all about teaching people how to accomplish their goals with, in some ways, less effort than they think they need to put forward. However, and that's about priming your environment and, you know, changing the people that you talk to, your social set and so on. But I also have this chapter on grit, and that's about the whole issue of hard work. And we do have this whole generation of young adults who grew up getting trophies just for getting on a soccer field. And so we have this over-trophied, entitled generation, part of the self-esteem movement, who really just don't know how to stick with things. You know, they quit.
Right.
And I have this line in the book about, you know, the dodo bird in Alice in Wonderland said, you know, all have won and all must have prizes. And you run up against that mentality a lot with people who are young adults and sometimes older people too, who simply believe everyone's a winner. And that's not true. And so you have to be prepared to stick with things through thick and thin, and that's the quality of grit that's been identified as the key determinant of whether or not you'll do things like final in the National Spelling Bee or drop out at West Point or survive Teach for America. It's the ability to have a big long-term goal that has short-term obstacles and to be resilient in the face of those obstacles. So that's a really important difference between my book and things like The Secret, which takes a more magical kind of subprime mortgage approach to getting what you want. You know, it's an awful lot about money and entitlement, and you deserve things just because you are a good person. And, you know, there's a lot of good evidence in my book to show there's a whole different way, but a proven way to actually identify and get the things that matter to you. It's not the law of attraction. It's actually the science of priming. So let's talk about what's real and known, not what's hypothetical and magical, as, you know, when it comes to coaching and the 21st century model.
Yeah, I think you just answered a question that I had when reading the book, which was, you know, why is there such a kind of an instant reaction among so many of us to positivity in a kind of why are you know, it's almost like a you're dreaming reaction. It's like being too positive is somehow an indicator that you're just not, you don't get it.
Yeah, well, you know, you can be a little bit too Pollyanna happy. You know, those are the 9s and the 10s on a scale of 1 to 10. And you can be a little unrealistic if you're way off in la-la land. However, I do think there's a killjoy factor, or kind of this, you know, people not always wanting to see other people succeed because they don't have the nerve or the guts to go after what they want. So how dare you? How dare you be happy or have dreams or go after them or even be successful? So, you know, it really keeps coming back to, you ought to ask yourself every day, why not? Why not me? Why not me going after those things, you know, that matter to me? I saw this great story in the New York Times about a 62-year-old ball boy at the most recent U.S. Open Tennis Championship.
Right.
And, you know, it was a great story because he was saying, well, why not me? Of course all the ball boys are 15 and 16, but why not me? What should exclude a 62-year-old man from running after a tennis ball between points? Nothing. He went for it. So it's like, and it's also like that viral video of the couple dancing down the aisle at their own wedding.
Right.
You know why people smiled and passed it around is because they took a risk. They took a risk and did something out of the box, and I think people long to do it. And sometimes they need to be shown the way and given permission, because otherwise it's very threatening to watch other people, you know, break the mold.
Right, and you have people with that reaction when somebody does take a risk and then succeeds, and other people look at it and say, well, there's something I'm not seeing, you know, as if there's a magic element to it. And that's why, you know, it doesn't happen for everyone. But I found that I think that the magic element that I've experienced in my life has been when I surrendered or gave up sort of the need for everything to be perfect. You know, you have that Mark Twain quote at the beginning of the book talking about, you know, you regrets about what you didn't try, you know, versus
right.
what you did. And it's this whole thing. When I gave up the idea that, you know, I'll do this great dream thing when I'm ready to perfectly achieve it, you know, but rather, you know, I'll start it today and it'll just be not very good. But then suddenly you're now in the world of the dream. You know, you're doing it.
You're doing it, and you're doing it because you had the nerve to start it, and you had the nerve to have the intention to start it. You know, so often what I find are these magical, it feels magical, but it's really not magical. It's simply people begin to transform their lives because they have a dream, they're hopeful, and they make effort instead of just kind of hoping and wishing that something will happen. They make efforts towards, you know, making things happen in their lives. And yeah, I'm always pointing out over and over, email after email, every week, did you notice what it was that made these great things happen? The difference between you a year ago and you now, or you a month ago and you now, is you articulated your vision and you actually went for it. You took some steps that gave you a mastery experience, and it creates this infectious domino experience where people just begin to topple their goals one after, you know, one after the next. And it looks magical, it feels magical, but it's really all about just getting in the game and swinging.
Right, and you talk, I mean, and that, and the essence, I guess, the framework or the blueprint for that is the list, and which is was great for me to read because I'm a list writer, but probably not in the way, definitely not in the way you describe in the book, but more in the way of using it as a way to sort of feel as if I'm doing things. I'll often make these elaborate lists, long to-do lists that I won't do, you know, but it's a way, that's almost a way of saying, ah, see, I feel like I've done something because I've made the list. But you sort of in the book say, here's a structure to it that takes it from imaginary or, you know, putting the dream down on paper and not doing anything into concrete, one small step.
Right. Exactly, and I think some people, you know, think vision boards are the only way to go, or, you know, bucket list, 100 things to do before I die, which is really a fun way to do it, but mostly this book is about just being able to set one goal and achieve it. You know, the happiest people, it's been found conclusively, wake up every day with clear-cut goals, and those goals tend to involve being connected with other people and having a purpose in life. But the happiest people have clear-cut goals. They wake up, and the vision of what they want their life to be is what pulls them forward. They don't react every day to what they left on the desk the night before. So they're able to make things happen almost because they put blinders on, because they have a list, and that list becomes a roadmap. Now, there's a lot of science behind what should be on that list, which I cover in the book, because not all goals are created equal, nor should they be. So you really have to know the difference, or, you know, work with a coach who actually has studied goal setting theory, which, you know, a lot of coaches have never even heard of, but one of the privileges of going to Penn was, you know, I got to study Locke and Latham's work, which is, you know, goal setting theory, and then go even deeper behind that. And so you really don't just want to, you know, go to a coach and say, here are my goals, you know, let's go for it, because how do you know they're the right goals? What if someone else set them for you? What if you adopt them because it's your parents or your workplace or whatever? So it's important to have a list, whatever form it takes. Vision board, bulleted list, something in your Moleskine, something on your computer, a slideshow, whatever it is. But if you don't get it out of your head, you can't measure it, and it's not concrete.
And so the question to you then is, this book represents the achievement of one of your goals. So yeah. What do you do now?
Oh, my goodness. What do you mean? Oh, I've got another book coming out next year. I'm thinking about a series of books. Creating your best life in sports, creating your best life at work, you know, and then I've got fitness goals. I'm a swimmer. I'm not like Dara Torres. I wish I was, but, you know, I want to do my high school times this year. So I'm 48 and just trying to be the best I can be every single year. And, you know, I have frivolous, funny goals. Like I wanted to be a mascot at a sporting event, and because it makes people smile. I realized there was a theme through a lot of my goals, serious and frivolous, was, you know, somehow it made the world a happier place.
Right.
So my husband bid in an auction. I got to be testudo at a University of Maryland, you know, basketball game. It was probably the most fun I've ever had at a sporting event because I got to go in the crowds and high-five the kids. And
right.
I just had a great time. So not all goals have to be serious and life-changing and skydive and visit the pyramids. As long as they're meaningful to you and they give your life kind of a purpose and you've got some pleasure in your life, that's what it's all about, is we have to wake up and know what it is we're shooting for every day. Otherwise, other people's goals are going to run our lives.
Well, it's a great book. It's a fascinating topic, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. The book is called Creating Your Best Life, The Ultimate Life List Guide. Caroline Adams Miller, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.